You listen to 247 Real Talk. This is your host, Julian Perry, welcoming you to another episode of this Real Talk podcast. We've recently witnessed two major decisions by the Supreme Court of the United States. And when I come back, we'll be chatting about my perspective on those decisions. I'll be right back. So good evening, one and all. Welcome to another episode of the 247 Real Talk podcast. It is about 10:28 on Wednesday, June 29th, 10:28 on the East Coast of the United States. And I'm so glad to be able to record another episode for you. I hope that you had a great week since my last episode and that great things that continue to happen for you, even though we obviously are in the middle of a tumultuous time, a lot of tempers flaring, a lot of people hurt, a lot of differences of opinions. And, you know, my position still stands that we need to listen to each other and we need to talk. So the Supreme Court gave a few decisions. Some of them went under the radar because we were focused on the two main ones. And in another episode, I'll speak about some other decisions they made that have some sort of impact that might have gone over our heads. But the two I'm going to speak about tonight, and I want to be careful because in real talk, you know, when you listen to my podcast, I want you to think, I want you to listen. It's not about whether you agree or disagree. It's about conversations, about having a real talk about how real people feel in real situations. And so I'm gonna speak about the Supreme Court decision regarding gun control in New York. And then I'm gonna go to very carefully deal with, but at least give certain perspectives on Roe versus Wade. So let's start with the gun control law. As I remember the case, and I didn't take time to review everything tonight because I wasn't sure I was actually going to record this episode or this topic. But basically, there were two men some 8 or 9 years ago who had gun permits, and their gun permits allowed them to carry a concealed weapon, for self-defense or whatever. The point is, it allowed them to carry a concealed weapon. They were law-abiding citizens, legally carrying, never had an infraction of the law, and I think the story goes that they went to renew it, and the carry part was taken away from them, and the argument was that was a breach of their constitutional right based on the Constitution as it exists. Now, let's stop right there. I'm not having a Second Amendment podcast. There can be a different time and a different podcast that we can debate the Second Amendment. The fact is, the Second Amendment, much like the 15th, much like the First, much like many others that give other rights that people even fought for, they exist on the books as they are right now. So let's not get into the conversation about whether you agree or disagree with the Second Amendment. That's a different conversation. The conversation I'm having now was the Supreme Court said, based on the existing Second Amendment, the law that New York State passed was unconstitutional. Based on the existing Second Amendment, whether you interpret it differently from I do or whatever, the fact is, on this decision, I happen to agree with the Supreme Court. Now, don't get it twisted. Don't jump in a bunch because I just said that. So, there's all this crime and all that. We need to listen to each other. You need to listen to what I'm saying. First of all, we're talking about based on what exists in the Second Amendment, what the New York State law did was unconstitutional. It was struck down by the Supreme Court. Now, let's talk about what people will want to consider possible ramifications. First of all, people have this thing, especially people who are so anti-gun. Some of them are anti-gun because they experienced, you know, something bad in their lives. And I'm not going to begin to try to sway those feelings, because if you've lost someone to gun violence, if you yourself have been a victim of gun violence, your prejudice and your bias is understood. We are human beings. But the fact of the matter is, let's talk about this law specifically, because it was specifically about New York and the law that pre-existed, or the law that was put into place in New York that banned, that made it a, what we call a may issue state as opposed to a shall issue state. And for those who don't know what I'm speaking about, in a may issue state prior to the Supreme Court decision, it meant that if someone applied for a concealed carry permit, they had to show proof or provide proof and reason to be able to carry it, meaning business owners who were carrying, you know, thousands of dollars a day or whatever, or own businesses or carried equipment of value or whatever. Those are the types of people who would get a concealed carry. And basically, a shall issue state says, if I go and apply for a concealed carry and my state has a shall issue policy, a shall issue law, then as long as I am a law-abiding citizen with no criminal background, I'm clean as, you know, whatever system they run you through, you're clean, you're allowed to carry because you have basically shown that you're a good person. Now, if you listen to the news stations as they go interview people on both sides, and we're going to focus a bit on the people who, you know, who automatically say, oh, we need to get rid of all these guns, all this gun violence, there's too much gun violence, there's too much shooting in the street. I agree with all of that. The problem is, because you're not listening, because you're using emotion instead of logic, you don't recognize that the people who are shooting, and this is not something that I'm making up. I want any single person who listens to this podcast, who is shaking their head right now in disagreement with me, to go look at the facts. The facts are as this. And this have been confirmed even by the words of our police commissioner, our attorney general, all those people in directly or indirectly, what they have been saying is that the guns that are used to commit the crimes in New York are being brought in from out of state. I am yet to hear one of them say that a law-abiding citizen who has a legal gun permit in New York State is the person committing the crimes. Hear me again. I am yet to hear any official in New York City or New York State say that people who they have put through the process of background checks, mental health checks, all that goes on in New York City especially, and have been granted a firearm permit are the people that they say are accountable or committing the crimes. So the fact is, whether or not you want to accept it, law-abiding citizens, I'm not talking about the whole country, although I think the statistic will hold up very well, but I'm saying law-abiding, I'm talking about New York because this Supreme Court decision was based on New York. It was for New York. So what I'm saying to you is, law-abiding citizens in New York have not committed any of these crimes. That's a fact. You go look it up as much as you want. Secondly, the firearms that are owned by the law-abiding citizens in New York have not been used to commit any of these crimes. That is also a fact. The fact is that laws are being passed that restrict law-abiding citizens who have already proven beyond a reasonable doubt and beyond any doubt of the system in place, mental check, mental health check, criminal background checks, all of that, that they are accountable and that they are law-abiding and that they are doing and obeying the rules under which they agreed to accept a gun permit. So the problem that you're having here in getting common sense gun laws, and I'm sorry, I do believe that the last set of gun laws recently passed in New York are do nothing to prevent what's going on. And I'll go into that a little bit more. First off, if you want to change the age, and I've said this in the previous podcast, but I'm going to repeat myself. It is 21 years of age to drink in New York. Through whatever process and whatever examinations that were done, it was agreed that someone at 21 years old has better judgment when they drink alcohol as opposed to someone who's 18 years old. So if you're making the change to the law as it was done to say someone needs to be 21 years old to buy a rifle, because you're using that as saying someone who's 21 years old is better able to make good decisions when using that rifle, I have no argument with you if your statistics and your research support that. What I'm saying is you pass that law under the guise that it will impact mass shootings. And I'm yet to hear any official draw a direct relationship between 18 and 21 and mass shootings. It does not mean that because someone was 18 and committed a crime or a mass shooting, that changing the age to 21 would make a difference. A criminal is a criminal. Okay? They are not a criminal. You're not going to tell me that at 18 years old, they were never had any negative thoughts. They were never criminal. But at 18 years old, they had criminal thoughts, and once they get to 21, they won't. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. The guy in Buffalo who shot up the black neighborhood in Buffalo, New York, was 18 years old, whatever, had already written a 183-page manifesto on the replacement theory. The replacement theory, as I've mentioned many times before, is he was under this prejudice and supremacist ideology that black people are here to replace white people. So therefore, his job was to get rid of as many black people as he could. So, that ideology, that ingrained hate between 18 and 21, it probably would have gotten a lot of worse by the time he got to 21. And again, I'm not arguing anything. There are other things that can be argued here, and that's not the purpose of what I'm saying. So don't get your mind wandering and stray elsewhere. What I'm saying to you is that when we pass laws, they must do two things. If they must accomplish the task that they're set out for. So in this case, those laws were supposed to help prevent mass shootings. All those laws did was what I called before, and I've mentioned it about three or four podcasts. When a baby is crying, you put him in your arms, him or he or she in your arms, and you rock them to sleep. That is a method of pacifying. And these laws were meant as pacification. Okay? You're actually pulling the wool over the eyes of the people who actually need help and are looking for change. There are comprehensive ways, and I'm not going to get into it on this podcast because I'm going to probably bring a guest on to have a more engaged debate about laws that actually make a difference in mass shootings. But there are things that can be done. The problem is getting to where to an agreement with enough support to pass laws, additional laws. And there are laws in the books that are not being enforced now. And I think I mentioned that to you before with, people get upset when you talk about the legal system. But I mean, for crying out loud, we know we have systemic racism. We know that our examination of the legal system has shown that there's been systemic racism. But the bottom line is, if you catch someone, if you pull someone over, police pull someone over, and that person is caught with a cache of guns, bringing it from out of the state, And there's no doubt as to what was going on. They didn't have a permit. They're, you know, whatever the case may be. Then that is someone who needs to be, you know, that is someone who needs to be made an example of. And the more these people realize that when they come in this state, they'll, you know, and they get caught, they're going to do real time right off the bat. Not the revolving door where some technicality and they walk in, they walk back out and they call their buddy and say, hey, I'll be out in a couple of days. Not that. Real time where people begin to understand that the minute you get caught with something like that and you are convicted beyond a reasonable doubt in a trial that is not prejudicial, then you're going to do hard time. Hard time. 25 years to life. Hard time. Something that deters people from doing this, because every official in New York has already, they've even gone to Washington to say, this is what is happening. They're not the guns in New York that are creating this problem. They're guns that are being brought in. Only today, I think the Attorney General of New York announced that she is suing several gun manufacturers or gun businesses. I'm not sure if they're manufacturers necessarily, but gun businesses or FFLs or federal, you know, licensed dealers for shipping parts of ghost guns into New York. She wants that stopped. Now, if New York doesn't want ghost guns to come in, that is a proactive method that actually would help. I have to agree that is, if your statistic says, and I believe that's what they're saying, that many of the crimes committed here are, especially recently, you're seeing ghost guns that are being purchased online, then proactively you want the purchasing of these guns that can't be traced to stop. And when you make an argument like that, I think you'll get a lot of, maybe not all, and I'll tell you why just now, why not all, but you get a lot of pro-gun people standing by your side agreeing with you. Because pro-gun or anti-gun, nobody wants to get shot. And that is an effective thing in making sure that the people who own the guns in New York are law-abiding citizens and that no guns are coming in that cannot be traced and then can be used in a crime, and you have no way of tracing, you know, finding who the criminals are, so they can just continue and repeat and repeat and repeat. So I personally believe that that's a good effort. But the other efforts, for instance, I recently heard some more information on the guy who was in Buffalo who committed that crime. And the fact of the matter is, I'm hearing that the bulletproof vest that he used, he used this metal plate insert. And apparently, the law that was passed in New York banning private citizens from buying a bulletproof vest unless you're in law, you know, private citizen, yeah, because you have to be in law enforcement to purchase the bulletproof vest, does not cover the type of vest that criminal used, or that perpetrator, alleged perpetrator, used in Buffalo. So then again, here we talk about the ineffectiveness of it. You know, I think it's terrible politics when you pacify people who are hurting off of, with real hurt, because they've been victims of gun violence, by passing laws that make it seem that are under the facade or the mirage that something was done to help them, when we know darn well that it was not. Let's face it. If I live in a bad neighborhood, if I got to come home every night to that neighborhood, if I have other, you know, obligations that don't permit me to be able to afford to move out of that neighborhood, and I've heard gunshots and I've seen people shot right in my neighborhood, and I want to say, when I leave work at night, I want to throw on a bulletproof vest because I just want to be safe. If so, you know, there's so many people getting stabbed on the subway for no reason. Certain bulletproof vests, and depending if you have the metal plate or whatever, can actually save your life from a stabbing, from a knife wound. And then certainly from a gunshot wound. Okay, now if you get shot in the head, that's a different story. But most of the time, these guys are shooting. You know, logic says that the larger part of your body is a bigger target. That logic doesn't work when people are shooting wildly on the streets. But no bulletproof vest and a bulletproof vest, you know, one offers more protection than the other. If I haven't done anything wrong, if I've never committed a crime in my life, if my only reason for spending $300 or more on a bulletproof vest is preservation of my life, the law-abiding, hardworking citizen, why are you taking that away from me? Because some criminal may use it. The fact of the matter is that when a criminal goes into to commit a crime, do you think that banning bulletproof vests from law-abiding prisons is law-abiding citizens is number one going to stop a criminal from wearing one? Number two, you think it's going to stop a criminal from driving across to, you know, another state and putting 10 bulletproof vests in their trunk and bringing them back in? Do you think it's the same gun trafficking story is going to occur now, right? Guys are going to start bringing in bulletproof vests for criminals, okay? And when they start shooting, the innocent people in New York are going to drop dead because maybe they wanted to have a bulletproof vest and they couldn't. I'm not saying that right now people run out and buy bulletproof vests as a norm. I'm simply saying that it should be my option, my right as a law-abiding citizen. A bulletproof vest is not a weapon, and in the right hands of a law-abiding citizen, it's a matter of protection. These things are just myths. These things are just made to pacify people who have been victims without understanding that this will no way prevent mass shootings. Well, the fact of the matter is that, again, I'm not going to get into the debate because I want to have that debate, hopefully with a guest in the show where we can really bring something, you know, in depth and even entertain, even engage, and maybe a bit argumentative either, but something that will begin to bring the conversation deeper about the issues that we both want. The reason that pro-gun people are really fighting against any gun law is because they don't trust the government. They don't trust the government because every time the government passes a gun law, in most cases, it goes against the legal law-abiding gun owner who has done nothing wrong. Now, I hear anti-gun people saying, why do you need a gun? Why don't I need it? Why shouldn't it be my choice if I'm going to use it sensibly, if I'm going to use it for sport, if I'm going to use it only for self-defense, if someone tries to attack me or my family or my kids or breaks in my home, if that is my reason for using it and I become proficient at it, meaning that I go and I train and I don't mind them putting laws and saying people who own guns need to do a certain amount of training. They need to do safety classes every year. They need to, you know, every year they need to re-up their safety classes just as a reminder of the safety of the firearm. They need to make sure that outside of the weapon or weapons that they're using in their home to protect themselves, if they own multiple weapons, the rest should be locked in a safe that someone can't walk into and get access to the weapons, that they are legally responsible and will pay a hard penalty if they are careless with their weapon and the child or something gets it into their hands. But we don't hear a lot of that. People say, oh, we hear about children shooting themselves all the time. No, it's not all the time. In a country of 350 million people, and probably, if you're counting everybody, probably over 400 million people, it's not all the time. It's nowhere near the top of the statistic. Now, let me touch on one other thing, because I want to get off of this and get to the other topic before I end this episode. They talk about, oh, people use it for suicide. Give me a break. Yes, people shoot themselves to suicide. A couple of weeks ago, somebody jumped off a building in Manhattan for suicide. Every other week, it used to be every day during the COVID. Now it's like maybe once a week, celebrities' children are committing suicide. They're not using a gun. There are so many people committing suicide every day that the news media does not cover that are not using a gun. Don't give me statistics on what the news media says. Give me statistics from the medical community. Because most of these people are not looking to put a gun to their head and blow their brains out, because that just thinking about that sounds excruciatingly painful. people using other ways. Don't get me wrong. I am completely against suicide. I believe that there's always someone you can talk to. And if you allow yourself, there's always something that can pick you up. There's always a way out. There's always a chance. And the only way you can get to those chances, you have to be living. I'm for the preservation of life. And for the same way I'm for the preservation of life, I feel that if I'm sleeping in my home at 3 o'clock in the morning, someone breaks in, okay? You didn't break in there because you had good intentions. The fact that you even came there to break in makes you a criminal, okay? And if you start the chain of events, and I've got children, a family in that house, and you step into my castle, you know, I think I've spoken to you guys about the castle doctrine before, and we can discuss that at another time. But if you step into my castle and I choose to shoot you and you hurt or you died, okay, to me, that should be on you. But as long as I have a legal firearm in defense of my castle, okay, one of the issues that we have at the same time is when you got some incredible criminals, career, lifelong criminals who tell you about the rights they have. And you're going to break into my house and you're going to, you know, be there where you're not supposed to be. I don't know what you're going to do. I don't even know if you're alone. I don't even know if you came there with two or three other people and the only one I'm seeing is you. I need to eliminate that threat immediately. Now, I'm not saying that in the process I may not lose my life too, but what are the options you give me? None? What else do I do with my children sleeping and my wife sleeping and whoever else is in my house? What else do I do when someone breaks into my house? You know, what do I do? Pick up a broom? What do I do? This is a reality. You know, I've heard so many stories of people coming home, especially in the suburbs, and they get out their car in their driveway and they get carjacked and they get shot. They got shot even though they gave up the car. Well, they might have got shot anyway, or there might have been someone who trains and keeps up, and they may have been able to, you know, because most criminals don't really train. I don't believe that. So maybe their training and everything would have made them make the right moves, because training, part of training in firearms is to react under stress, react while running, react out of breath. All those things are trained. And so maybe they would have been able to actually turn the tables to use their firearm and save their lives. I've actually seen videos of, I've seen a few videos where that happened, where someone went to carjack someone when they pulled in their driveway. They pulled out a gun. When they ordered the person out the car, the guy came out the car firing. Okay. And the criminal shot back as he ran, but the criminal got shot because obviously, you know, many criminals, like I said, can't really shoot, right? They got a gun, they shoot, they hope to hit their target. But the fact of the matter is, again, I'm not condoning violence. We live in a world, and this is the reality of our world. You know, to talk about condoning violence, we all want a peaceful world. I got news for everyone out there. Whether you believe in whatever you believe in, including people like me who are people of faith, we have a world that's going downhill. Crime is worse. Everything else is in a really bad place. And the fact of the matter is that even people of faith are also people of common sense. It's like some, you know, as a man of faith, I believe that God created doctors. So when we get sick, we have a course of action we can take to use another human being to help us. Even in the stories of, again, whether you believe that's up to you, but even if you look in the New Testament and things that Jesus did and people were healed and all of that, it's all about us working together as people. The entire premise is us working, living and living together on this planet. And when one faction of this of us decides to be violent and decides to exploit the other faction of us, of people who are looking for peace, we can either lay down and just let them run over us and kill us all, or we can stand up and we can use common sense. There's an old saying that says, I'd rather be judged by 12 than buried by 6. And I have yet to find the person I think if you have a mother, for instance, with a baby, the most nonviolent woman, and you try to hurt her child, you will see part of the character of that woman that you've never seen before. She'll rip your head off. Why? Preservation of life. So it is really, really important to get it. The fact of the matter is, we need to have conversation. We need to be able to talk to each other. We need to be able to come to a place where we can prevent crime and we can still preserve our rights, not only for self-defense, but also for, like, I like the sport, I like the competition, and all these other things. I'm calling upon, you know, the officials to start doing things with common sense, start doing things that make sense, rather than pursuing laws with a wide brush. It's like there was a primary in New York yesterday for governor of New York. And again, this is not political, but it happened to be the words of the Republican nominee who won the primary. And his name is Lee Zeldin. And what he said was, we need to start separating between law-abiding gun owners and criminals. And painting everyone with one broad brush is a way to make really bad and unconstitutional policy. That has proven to be a fact. He says, if a law-abiding citizen wants to safely and securely carry a firearm for their personal self-defense, that is very different from a criminal who, by the way, doesn't care about the law when it is on the books. That's also true. So you have your opinion, I have mine. But we have to be, I don't even know about proving wrong and proving right, but we need to be open-minded. We need to listen to each other because there's so much more involved here than we think we know. And even someone who has been a victim, the fact of the matter is that if they really examine the truth of the matter and they want laws that will stop mass shootings, then they need to make sure that the laws that are passed are laws that effectively do so. Now we go on to the second law, and that is the Roe versus Wade decision by the Supreme Court. Now, many of you already riled up by what I just said about gun control, and you're unsure of what I'm going to say. But I'm actually not going to give a full-out opinion on Roe versus Wade. Here is why. Just like the gun control issue or any other issue, it's not a right or wrong issue. I think it's an issue of, that's a complex issue. You can't just go right or wrong because there are so many aspects to it. But my perspective on it is basically that even though we as men are involved in the process of creating a child, we're part of the process of the insemination, we're not the ones who are carrying that child for 9 months. We are completely and totally unaware of what a woman goes through, what her body goes through, what she goes through physically, what she goes through emotionally, what she goes through mentally. You know, as I listened to people debate it and as I listened to the anger on both sides, well, not even anger, there was one side had jubilation and one side was angry. And, you know, it was hard to understand. I don't know. You know, up to this day, as a man of faith, the whole purpose of being in church and listening to the word, sometimes the same passages in the Bible over and over again, is for better understanding. You can't pick and choose either. Either you believe God is the creator of life or you don't. And if you believe that God is creator of life, you also need to understand that God is judge. We are not the judges. So if a woman is unfortunately raped, to tell her she has to keep that child, I personally think is not in the decision that any of us should have an opinion on. I mean, and I'm sorry that this part of my episode will leave more questions than answers, but it is that complicated. Who wants to know? I mean, think about this scenario, and I'm being honest here, okay? Don't blow up my email and blow up my messages and all that with hate messages or anger because you don't agree with me. Real talk, we don't do that, okay? I believe in listening to everyone. I believe in having a real conversation. But if you're going to come at me with that nonsense, I will block you, okay? And I'm saying that because I really want us to get to a place that we live together, we respect each other, and we respect the right to choose. And we understand what choices should be. I can't imagine the scenario where a man is married to a woman. Let's say he has two kids. And then they go through the real unfortunate trauma of her being raped. We're not even talking about what can happen between that act and the couple even staying together. Because I can't imagine the kind of pressure that puts on a relationship. We're human beings, both men and women. We're all human beings. We have feelings. I can imagine how a husband feels looking at his wife, and some husbands may start to look at their wife differently immediately because, you know, someone else violated her. You know, sometimes I can imagine couples where, because of where it happened, the husband is blaming the wife for what she was wearing or where she was going because he told her not to take that route and she felt it was the shortest way home. All sorts of things could happen. I'm not saying he's right. I'm saying I can imagine all these things occurring in the belly of this act. And if they manage to get past all of that, and then you have a child that's born now. And let's make it worse. Let's face one or two scenarios. The first scenario is the rapist is never caught. It takes a lot for both parents, even a mother who birthed that child, who was in love with her husband, who has two other children, who now has this child that looks nothing like her husband, looks nothing like her, or maybe a little bit like her other two children, but you live every day looking at this child, knowing that that child was not a choice. There's a difference between being with someone that you want to be with and accidentally through whatever, getting pregnant, because the act of being with them was consensual. So, you know, what are we creating here? And when that child grows up in a household where the dynamic might be so effective, okay, not effective, but affective, meaning affecting this child to the point where they can feel it. If that child grows up to be angry, a criminal, whatever the case may be, is that okay? If that child grows up to be affected in any kind of way, okay, if you'll think about the scenario where the rape occurred and it was a family member, it was incest. So now the child is born with a disability. Apart from all those things I just spoke about, you've also got the health issue now, the cost of not only maintaining that child. But the fact is, the child may have such a disability that their life might be horrible. Their life might be short, or they may live many years in a disability where they're robbed of so many things, of the basic things we take for granted in life. I also don't believe that people should be going out there and having sex and then oh, I got pregnant. I realized I'm pregnant. Get rid of the child. That's also irresponsible. So now that sounds like I'm talking on the other side of it. No. What I'm saying is it's a very complex issue. And I'm saying that I don't know the answers, but I don't think we're getting any closer to it because I think that the conversation has been more like us yelling our positions at each other rather than listening and conversing about it in a manner that we're allowing ourselves to be flexible and just don't stand on what we think we believe when we don't know all the facts. At the end of the day, I really strive to live a life of live and let live. And I mean that in the sense that I am not judge nor jury. God creates life is my belief. But I don't know what God's position is on someone who violated one of the lives he created. So just as it biblically where there were people who were criminals, some were forgiven, some were put to death, I don't know how God looks at a rapist. I don't know, because that's the person who commits such an act is not doing so following any biblical. And that's the part I do understand, because there are a lot of people who only consider, well, God creates life, full stop, end of sentence. But if someone hurt one of God's children in creating that life, that's a new dynamic. Do they take that into consideration? No, God created life. You don't have the right to take it. But God didn't condone the person being raped. God didn't condone a helpless child being raped by a relative. That was the relative committing an evil act. And in this world, there's good and evil, and good things happen to good people. And bad things also happen to good people. The whole dynamic of faith and belief is a very complicated one that has to come from within you in your relationship with God. That's my belief. Again, you don't have to believe what I believe. So I'm saying that I don't have any answers to this part of it in terms of the decision that was made. But I do believe that it's kind of hard to have a right or a wrong or a definitive yes or a definitive no. And to hear people, I couldn't imagine to tell a woman who was walking home, going home to her family, her loving husband and her kids, and some made a wrong turn and got raped and was hoping nothing happened, ends up pregnant. You know, I'm trying to stay away from my personal opinion. I do have personal opinion. I'm trying to stay away from them in this podcast because the line I'm trying to draw is that we need to look at each person's scenario. We need to have compassion. We need to even those who are standing on biblical ground need to look at that deeper and understand that God is judge, God is jury. We are not. And the fact is that just like how an adult goes out and shoots another adult in the head and kills them, okay, we didn't, you know, what did we say about, what did we say about that that's different than what we're saying about abortion? They're both crimes, okay? They're both crimes that at the end of life, God will be judge and jury as to what we did down here. But I find it hard to have someone criminally violated. I mean, it's not just affecting one person. And then if you force that woman to give birth to that child, then if she decides to give the child up, you're still creating a whole new problem. Because number one, now you're putting another child in the system to go through all the things that happen to children in the system. You're also putting that, you know, suppose the woman is raped and then, you know, she's forced to keep the child and maybe it's her first child and something goes wrong and in childbirth and she dies. because she couldn't, you know, there's so many complicated issues. I just think that people like to go cut and dry, and I'm a cut and dry person for most things, but there's some things that require a lot more understanding, compassion, patience, listening to each other, you know, and recognizing that there's a big difference between someone who is just promiscuous and wants to just throw away child after child after child without responsibility versus someone who's saying, look, you know, I have a family and I was raped and I don't want to go through with this because, you know, it's not with the person who I loved, and it could destroy the lives of all of my children, my husband, my whole family. You know, so many states were quick to have trigger laws that went into effect right away. And I was astounded to hear how many of them did not make exceptions for rape and what they call it, a threat to the life of the mother to give birth to that child. This needs a lot more conversation. But at the end of the day, we are responsible for ourselves. I believe that. I am responsible for my life. You're responsible for yours. And if you're talking about democracy, if you're talking about the right to choose, then it gets a lot more ambiguous again, because a woman is the person going through the pregnancy. And I think the woman is the person who has the right at the end of the day to make that decision between herself and God. If you believe, and I think there are a lot of conservative evangelists, if I'm correct, who are happy that Roe versus Wade was thrown out. But if you believe in the same thought that there is a God, and if you believe that God is judge and jury for each and every one of us, then a person who goes through any scenario and decides to abort that child, the day is going to come when they close their eyes, they leave this earth, and they will face our Creator, who is judge and jury. There just needs to be a lot more conversation. And I think in this case, having 9 judges, and it was a pretty close decision. I think it was a 5-4 decision. And I can't help but think that, you know, obviously we're not held up to think. We know for a fact that that decision came down based on political ideology too, which in this case has much, you know, much bigger ramifications than other decisions on other issues. So I'm sorry that I can't give you an answer. I can only give you my thoughts. I still don't have a clear answer in my mind. I think about it all the time because there's so many scenarios that offer so many things. It is a struggle, much like the struggle we have when we're in everything we do in our life, in our struggles with as we live to be good people in faith and all those things. But if you're striving to be a good person and do the right thing, it's supposed to be a struggle. It doesn't come easy. I have a lot more thinking to do in terms of how I feel about it. But at the same time, I guess, you know, I've been contradicting myself because I haven't been doing that much thinking about it, because I think at the end of the day, maybe we should start with the body of people who make the decision on the law should be all women. Let me say that again. The body of people, whether we convene a special one-time ever court of law in the United States made up of a panel who makes the final decision on Roe versus Wade should be made up of all women. Men, we don't carry it. We can argue that, you know, we love this woman and we wanted to have a child and she got rid of our child. But that child could have, that child could have died in childbirth. Or that, I just don't think that we have the weight or the input or for that kind of decision. I can understand that we have a part in it to a certain extent, but the part we have in it can't compare to the woman being raped. It can't compare to any of those factors. It can't compare to the woman whose life is at risk to die during childbirth. It just can't. So maybe it starts with the decision being made by a panel that equally represents all the sections or all the thought processes of the total dynamic within our society. And then when women talk to women, they figure it out. And maybe they'll come up with something way better than the Supreme Court came up with. I don't know. Me personally, as I said, I believe God is judge and jury. And I believe that people who are good people make decisions in their lives that they think is the right decision. And I think, again, if a woman has a family and she's in love with her family, in love with her husband, and someone violates her, to ask her to have that child is probably something that I don't even want to say it in my podcast because I'd be responsible to say what I'm thinking. Just suffice to say that the pressure you put on a woman forcing her to do that can have consequences to even herself. We have a lot of work to do as human beings, and the direction we're taking the world in doesn't seem to support the work we have to do. Maybe I'll speak about this topic again. I'm not sure, because as I talk to you here, I'm probably more confused than when I started the conversation. Only because I'm treading so, it's such a complex issue that I'm treading so lightly. Not because I don't want to offend someone, but because I want to be considerate of everyone's position. Because it's that deep of an issue. But at the end of the day, the decision of what happens, let's start here. The decision of what happens should be made up of a panel of all women. And when they come up with a decision, then maybe they can discuss it with men just to find out how they feel. But we don't carry the child. We are not the ones that face the incest, the rape, the risk of life, all the things that can happen. So for us to have a major input just doesn't seem right. This is my opinion. And my opinion doesn't have a side, pro or con. My opinion has a human dynamic or offers a human dynamic in the process. I'm making it very clear that I do not know the answer to every scenario that can happen. I'm making it very clear that I certainly support a woman's right, based on what happens. I also don't support someone who is just promiscuous and just keeps getting pregnant and getting rid of children. I don't support that either. So I don't know where to go with this. But I wanted to have this conversation because if you feel the same way I do, and you feel turmoil whenever you look at the issue, then I feel at the same time you can get to a better place by having conversations. I have spoken to some women who say, even if they decide to be promiscuous and keep having a child and get rid of it, it's their body. I can't argue with that either, because I don't think we have the right to tell a person what to do with their body. If we can't stop somebody from committing suicide, we certainly can't stop somebody from deciding what to do with their body. Do we have the right to legally, as a law, do that? I don't think so. Okay? It gets so complicated when we're talking about a child that's not yet out of the womb and in the world as a physical being, but it's in the body of someone else who's a host. When you go to someone else's house and you visit them and they're the host, they make the rules. So in this case, you have to say, where do we go from here? I don't know. but I wanted to share my thoughts with you because you can see how confused I am on the issue. And again, I'm not against a woman's right to choose. I'm not saying that she, I'm not, you know, I don't know. I'm saying that there's not, it's not cut and dry that every scenario. Let me roll back on that. First of all, I'm saying that so far, I cannot think of every single scenario to make an intelligent and knowledgeable decision. Second of all, I'm saying that I see just looking from the outside that we as men need to take a step back and away from it in terms of the decision making because it's not our bodies. Third of all, I'm saying that if we looked at something just for the sense of logic and you take the biblical and the spiritual part out of it a second, you can maybe see one or two scenarios where someone can be abusive to alter the process. But then again, I guess it comes down to when does a child become, I know, when does a child get to the point where you consider that child tangible, so to speak, for lack of a better term. And I know they're different. It's so many weeks, they have a heartbeat and all of that. It's a very complicated issue. But if you ask me just to generalize my choice, I'm going to say all the decisions that have to be made about right to choose or whatever should be made by women. Because it's their bodies, it's they who have to go through the process. And if it's going to be fear, they need to discuss it and come up with something that both sides can agree on that they can live with as women, as the ones who make the sacrifices. Beyond that, I'm almost afraid to answer because I'm afraid of anybody, you know, being upset about my answer, because I honestly don't know. It is such a complex issue. I don't know. What I'm personally going to do here is I'm going to pray about it. Because in my mind, there's things that I haven't mentioned here that I see can go really, really bad now that it has been overturned. And in those things, you know, there can be a resulting things can be a loss of life, even for the loss of life of the women who carry the children. So I'm not sure that we thought this through completely when this decision was made. I know it's a very emotional decision, but I also believe that since God judges us all, maybe the best answer to all this mess is it should be an individual decision between a woman and her God. I can't think of any other reason or any other way that we can come to a conclusion that makes any sense. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things that we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Your will, not ours, be done. I thank you as always for your support. I thank you as my listeners who communicate with me for the courage that you give me to even approach the subjects, or the subject matter that I did in this episode. I welcome you to send me messages in good faith so we can have an intelligent conversation. No hatred, no anger, just peace and just productive conversation that can turn many things around and put us in a better place as human beings living together in the one planet that we have. Until the next time, take care of yourselves and each other.